This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. And it's Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar in the studio with us, our neurogeneticist for our Brainwave series. Today we're going to try and understand Alzheimer's disease genetics. A 73-year-old woman from Colombia had managed to stave off Alzheimer's disease for decades. And this is despite the fact that she carried a genetic mutation that caused many in her family to develop dementia in middle age. But it was recently reported that she may carry another genetic mutation that may have protected her from early onset dementia. To find out more about what this means, Dr. Azlina Ahmad is actually going to speak to us about that. Welcome to the show, Dr. Azlina.
Hi,
how are
Mira.
You today?
Good, thank you.
You know, let's talk about the genes that affect Alzheimer's disease. Have we identified all of them?
So for Alzheimer's disease, you can kind of class them into two types. So one is what we call early onset Alzheimer's, where the individuals typically will start showing symptoms before the age of 50, some even as young as 25. And then you have late onset Alzheimer's disease, and those are typically 65 years old and above. So the ones that get it younger, they tend to have other family members who also have Alzheimer's disease also at a younger age. So the younger onset ones tend to be familial, so meaning that, you know, it tends to be inherited in families, whereas the later onset ones, the ones that people who get it over 65 and above, those don't necessarily have a clear family history, meaning that some people, you know, if you ask them, do you have any other family members with Alzheimer's, and they will say no. Others may have. So it's a little bit unclear in terms of the family relationship for late onset Alzheimer's disease. So for the early onset Alzheimer's disease, there have been a number of genes that have been identified as being causal for Alzheimer's in these families. Whereas for the late onset Alzheimer's disease, of course, it's you know, multifactorial, meaning that you have... It's slightly different in terms of the genetics as well, but it also could be caused by, you know, lifestyle and also the environment, and a combination of all the three: genetics, lifestyle, and environment. So for the later onset Alzheimer's, it's a little bit more difficult to work it out. But there have been some studies that have started to show some genetic basis for late onset Alzheimer's, yeah.
So below 50 is the early onset, mm-hmm. and over 65 is the later onset of Alzheimer's. So is it...
The more common form is the later onset, of course.
Sure. Yeah. Can we confidently say that the early onset Alzheimer's disease is very genetically linked?
The early onset?
Yes.
Yes, so you can sort of follow... You know, the pattern of the disease in the family. So there'll be many members that are affected, and then they can follow certain what we call mode of inheritance, meaning that, you know, we can see that every generation there will be at least one or two family members. So normally, from a geneticist's point of view, when you see that happening in a family, that kind of, you know, sends a big kind of clue that there's clearly some kind of abnormal gene that has been inherited amongst the affected family members.
Yeah. So let's talk about this 73-year-old Colombian woman. I mean, can you give me a bit of a background of the case?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting family. It's one the world's largest family with what we call autosomal dominant Alzheimer's disease. So how you can get diseases that are inherited because of an abnormal gene, there are many different ways. So, for example, I'll take the simplest one, which is X-linked. So if you have a X-linked, meaning that there's a gene on the X chromosome, and if you inherit the abnormal copy on that X chromosome, then you will have a X-linked disease, right? And then you have another type of way where the disease can manifest, whereby, you know, in genes normally you have two copies. Mm-hmm. So in autosomal dominant, if you have just one abnormal copy of that gene and that one abnormal copy is enough to cause the disease, then that's what we call it's dominant, autosomal dominant. Just one copy is enough. And then there's another type called autosomal recessive, where you need both copies to be abnormal. And then you start to get the disease. So in this particular family, the Colombian family, they had an autosomal dominant type of Alzheimer's disease. And it's a very well-studied family. And actually, it was already known that they carried, that the affected family members carried a mutation in a particular gene that had already been discovered previously. And it's a gene known as presenilin 1. So for early onset Alzheimer's disease, typically people always talk about three different genes. There's one called APP, which is, some of you may have heard about the amyloid, right? In Alzheimer's disease, you have these amyloid, abnormal amyloid proteins that accumulate in the brain tissue. And so if you have an abnormal copy of this APP gene, then that causes abnormal processing of the amyloid protein. And so that's what people think, that abnormal processing is then what causes them to behave differently, and then they start to come together and form a clump.
So right? that's what I always understood, that it had everything to do with the amyloid protein.
Yeah, so the pathology will always come down to the amyloid, but how you get the abnormal amyloid accumulation can be caused by mutations in any of these three genes. So either the direct one will be the APP gene, which is directly involved in producing the amyloid protein. But then these other two, which are these presenilin, or PSEN, 1 and 2 for short, they are also involved in processing beta amyloid. So altogether, right, all three genes ultimately will lead to abnormal amyloid accumulation, but they're three separate genes. So in this particular family, they had a mutation in the PSEN1. And even within this family, they had a number of affected individuals, who the youngest of whom had Alzheimer's at 25 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, can you imagine? Yeah, and whereas there were other family members who had, slightly later, right, onset. So they chose this particular lady to look at her DNA further, because actually when they looked at her DNA, they knew that she had this mutation that was causing all her other family members to get early onset dementia.
Which is PSEN1.
Yeah, which is the PSEN1 okay. mutation. Mm-hmm. But then she didn't develop any signs of dementia, although she had the amyloid accumulation. So
at 73. She
yeah,
73.
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, she was, if her other family members, let's say, average about 50, they would have got it around 50. I mean, she was 70 and completely fine. So, you know, it was almost as if she was able to delay, right, the onset by two decades. So what they found in her was that she, just by chance, really, really just by chance, she had another mutation in a different gene, one that is also quite well known in the Alzheimer's world, the ApoE gene. And the change that she had in this ApoE gene is very rare. You know, very, very rare. But what it was doing was it was actually preventing the accumulation of another type of change that we see in Alzheimer's brains, which is these tangles forming. And these tangles are made up of a protein called the tau protein. So normally these tau proteins in our neuron, they form these sort of beautiful, long, very straight railway tracks. But when they are abnormal, they clump together and they can no longer do what they're supposed to do, because, you know, they're supposed to form these tracks so that things, it's like a railway track. Mm-hmm. So the cell uses those railway tracks to move things from one place to another in the cell and to maintain the shape of the cell and so on and so forth. So when you don't have these tracks there anymore, then you're not shuttling things where they're supposed to be, and also the shape of the cell then changes. So her second mutation was actually, although there was the amyloid, she had the amyloid accumulation, but she didn't have the tangles. So this is really very interesting, I think, in terms of potential therapy, because, you know, people are thinking, okay, you know, even if you have this genetic mutation that can cause you to have Alzheimer's, but we can somehow, you know, delay the progress significantly.
So just to recap, right? So she's this lady... family mm-hmm. all had the PSEN1 gene.
The affected
right?
ones, yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. all of them who were affected. Mm-hmm. And is it a given that everybody has abnormal tau protein? Everyone with Alzheimer's has abnormal tau protein?
Most people, you will see both. The amyloid accumulation as well as the tau tangles.
Sure, yeah. The tau tangles.
So those are, you know, typically we call them hallmarks, pathological hallmarks of Alzheimer's. So if you were to do a postmortem on somebody, then those are the two things that you are most likely to see.
The gene and the tau protein.
The amyloid accumulation and the tau protein tangles. Yeah.
Okay, so this lady had
the amyloid
tangled. She had amyloid, but her tau protein wasn't tangled, right?
That's right.
But she also had the ApoE gene. What was that? I mean, can you link that
again? ApoE. So the ApoE, so what the ApoE gene was doing was basically, so this paper that came out, they very nicely kind of explained or showed some evidence as to what they think is going on. So the ApoE, this rare variant in this other ApoE gene, which is known, the variant is called the R316S, but anyway, that's just a little bit of detail. And basically what this abnormal gene was doing was that it was interacting with another protein. And this other protein, its job is to kind of bring in tau from the outside mm-hmm. into the cell. So when her form of this ApoE gene was preventing the tau from coming in, it was reducing the amount of tau that she was bringing into the cell. So in that way, it was kind of, you know, limiting the amount of tau that you have in the cell that could then form tangles. So that's why the community was quite happy. It was quite excited by this discovery, I think, because they can sort of see a way. Well, wow, you know, we didn't know that that was a mechanism we could block. So then, of course, you know, that brings up the whole possibility of, you know, either drug target, right? That maybe it's difficult to stop the amyloid accumulation. Because there have been many clinical trials that have tried to do that and they've failed so far. So if we can't stop the amyloid accumulation, could we somehow stop this this other thing from happening, right? The tau tangles. And
that could possibly be done with the ApoE gene.
So the ApoE, so this lady was lucky that she had the variant that naturally allowed her to prevent the tau tangles from happening. But for other people who don't have this mutation, so you could somehow mimic what happens in her naturally in other people by using drugs.
So you
potentially
have a mutation of the PSEN1 mm-hmm. gene, right? And then now she has the ApoE mutation, which in combination has helped prevent the onset of Alzheimer's.
Yeah, helped to delay it.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a protective mechanism. It's a natural protective mechanism. So quite similar if you think of, you know, there was a finding a number of years ago about the receptor, the HIV receptor, the CCR5 receptor. And that was also a chance discovery. They found a mutation in a man who had a change in the receptor, which is responsible for allowing the virus to bind to the outside of the cell and kind of insert its DNA to cause havoc in the cell. So, like, you know, it's like a door. So he had a different type of doors that the virus could not come in
right.
to the cell. And protective, also in a similar way, a natural protective mechanism. And of course, that's one of the things that, you know, the controversial Chinese scientist, He Jian Kui, mm-hmm. I think, tried to do with gene-edited babies. So he tried to insert that mutation into the children to prevent them, to make them, you know, resistant to HIV.
Do we know what happened?
Well, he hasn't published. Oh. So we don't know the details. We only know based on what he presented at the meeting a year ago.
That's terribly unethical, isn't it?
Yeah, and then, of course, the children are very young, so they their identities are known and that kind of thing. So, yeah, but, you know, it'd be interesting to see you.
To find out.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll come back and find out more about understanding genes when it comes to Alzheimer's disease. It's very exciting because this woman who is 73, who has a very strong family history, has managed to stave off Alzheimer's disease for decades, you know, because she had an extra mutation of a certain gene. We'll come back and find out more as to whether or not this is a situation which is quite rare for this lady. And if we are indeed able to sort of come up with targeted therapy to get the Alzheimer's patients to get their ApoE mutation going, to see or not whether we can prevent those tau protein tangles. That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's our neurogeneticist in the studio. We're trying to understand genes linked to Alzheimer's disease. Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, trying to explain, and so far doing quite well, I think, Dr. Azlina.
Okay, thank you.
So let's just recap, right? This 73-year-old woman from Colombia has staved off Alzheimer's disease for decades, despite having the genetic mutation of PSEN1, which is linked to Alzheimer's disease, in which her family had, most of them who had Alzheimer's, had the PSEN1 mutation, which triggered the Alzheimer's. And we know that amyloid, beta amyloid accumulation is one of the things you look for when it comes to Alzheimer's disease. And it's interesting that it is usually coupled with tau protein tangles, which sort of makes the disease happen. Right?
Yeah.
So what's interesting with this lady is, although she had the PSEN1 gene, they found that she didn't have tau protein tangles, only to find that the reason she didn't have those tangles is because she had the ApoE mutation, which most people don't. So I'm wondering,
so she had a rare variant in the ApoE gene.
Okay, yeah. Not a mutation.
A mutation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's very rare. So the ApoE gene actually, it's quite common to have mutations in the ApoE gene. But the one she had specifically is very rare.
And it is estimated that less than 1% of Alzheimer's disease is caused by genes, Dr. Azlina.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go back to basics for a minute now. Is it all related to the APP gene, the PSEN1 and 2? You've identified three genes. Mm. Does everybody with Alzheimer's have a mutation of
those three?
Yeah, or one of the three or two of the three.
Yeah, so for the three genes, they're more commonly associated with the early onset. Yeah. So for the later onset ones, there's another gene, the ApoE gene, which is more talked about in terms of later onset, because when you look at diseases which develop later in life and which are complex in terms of their causality, right? So it could be a mix of genetics, it could be a mix of the lifestyle or environment. Then rather than talking about the mutation being the cause of the disease, we tend to think of it more as a risk. So we carry a risk, we call it a risk allele, or basically a form of the gene that can confer risk. So
what would trigger that mutation? Is it your environmental factors in your lifestyle?
Yeah, no. So for people who carry these risk mutations, they would have had it from birth.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the kind of other question that people are still trying to understand, because, for example, in Alzheimer's disease, you only you start to show the symptoms when you're about 70. But of course, now we know that the degeneration that's happening in the brain is actually already happening up to 20 years before you show the symptoms. So let's say the death of the cells in your brain are happening around, say, 50 or so. So, but you've been living with that mutation for 50 years and, you know, you were okay, yeah. right? So why is it that it starts to become a problem from middle age onwards? So that's still a kind of open-ended question, but people are thinking that, you know, if you think of the cell, okay, especially once it gets to midlife and, you know, 70 onwards, the cell itself is kind of aging. And in the cell, you know, over those decades, it would have also accumulated some like waste products, mm-hmm. right, that are usually cleared, right? So usually cleared, but you may have some residue in there. And so what happens is that residue, little bit by little bit, little bit, little bit, after a while, you get a buildup, right? And then on top of that, you have the cell is aging. So it can't quite cope with that waste anymore, right? And so then it reaches a threshold. Then that's when you start getting problems. And so when we think of when we think of genes as being risk genes, typically a mutation on its own in that risk gene is not able to cause Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. But what it does is that the protein is not able to function 100%. Okay? And so what happens is that the cell can cope with it functioning 70%, you know, at the 70% level, you know, for 50 years. But then suddenly when you have aging and when you have waste products, and then the cell now actually reaches a threshold when 70% isn't enough anymore, right? And then that's when that taken all together, then it starts to affect the health of the cell. And so then the cell starts to slowly get sicker and it degenerates. Yeah.
Because of that mutation as well.
Because of that mutation. So when we look at people who have late onset Alzheimer's, typically we look at these genes that confer risk. And so there have been a number of studies that have indicated that because it is a very complex disorder, then you would expect many, 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 many genes to be involved. And they're all in, you know, they're all kind of like the genes are making proteins which are, you know, not completely abnormal. They're kind of working. They can work, you know, but 70%, 60% of the time. But, you know, over time, you know, as you age, like I explained, you know, the cumulative amount and in combination with all the other factors, the cell reaches a threshold. Yeah.
So if I don't have any of these three genes, so that means it will not be able to make that protein, which eventually could prove to be defective over time.
Yeah, so for the
protein cannot exist without mm-hmm. the gene, am I correct?
Mm-hmm. So for the early onset Alzheimer's, actually what happens is, so when you have changes in the protein, the type of change that the protein acquires can either be that the protein cannot work at all, so you have absolutely no function, right? So the abnormality causes the protein to have no function, or it can cause the protein to gain a new function that may be harmful to the cell. So sometimes what happens is that the mutation can actually cause that protein to be even more harmful. And so sometimes we see that in neurodegenerative diseases where you get a gain of function which is harmful. So in the case of Alzheimer's disease, for the presenilin, actually what they do is they actually interfere, the mutation in the presenilin interferes with the correct processing of the beta amyloid. And so you don't get the right beta amyloid, the right healthy, you know, so to speak, beta amyloid forming. Because actually everybody makes beta amyloid. What happens is the mutation causes an abnormal form of the beta amyloid
to
be made.
Which are the clumps that you mentioned.
And then these abnormal forms of beta amyloid then get very sticky and they want to clump together.
Then you have the tau protein.
And then the tau protein then is either a secondary effect, or if you have a mutation in the presenilin, then it is because you're not making the right tau, then it's a different story, because then that's your primary problem.
But we know now that just beta amyloid accumulation by itself it's not going to cause Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, actually, it was already known. That was already known a number of years ago because, you know, they did the MRI and they found that even a normal, you know, cognitively normal elderly people had beta amyloid accumulation in their brain. So you know, actually, for the whole kind of, you know, Alzheimer's research community, there's this kind of, there are two camps. There's the camp that thinks that, you know, what's causing the death in the neurons is the beta amyloid. And then there's another camp that thinks it's the tau tangles.
Well, this explains it.
Yeah, it's been difficult to kind of, you know, merge them together because there'll be evidence that suggests more in favor of one than another, you know. And so every year it's sort of like, okay, it could be this, could be that, could be this, you know, it could be the amyloid, it could be the tau.
But doesn't this case sort of tell you that?
Yeah, that's right. So that's why, you know, there's been quite a lot of interest in this case because it's suggesting that the, you know, the beta amyloid in itself, again, is not causative for Alzheimer's disease. And actually, you do need the involvement of the tau tangles to cause, you know, the development of dementia.
So if we think about targeted therapy, what does that mean? That we now have to come up with treatment or targeted therapy to sort of induce ApoE mutation? Is that what you're going to do?
It'd be really hard to induce the ApoE mutation in the neurons because really quite tricky. But what you could do is you could try to mimic what's happening. And so you could find you could screen for drugs, okay, or certain molecules or chemicals that are able to interfere. So now we know that, you know, her rare mutation was preventing the entry of tau. So can we find something or can we manufacture something that can prevent the entry of tau, right? If the scientific world can kind of work out that mechanism of how is actually tau entering the cell and can we block it somehow? So the blocking of that entry would be mimicking what happens in this lady naturally.
Okay. Where do you think all of this will go?
Oh, it's...
And if you say there's so many camps and research is coming out literally on a daily basis, is that an exaggeration?
Well, not maybe not daily basis. Maybe
like
every year. So, yeah. I mean, I think because Alzheimer's is a huge public health concern, of course. And, you know, there's a lot of research that's going on. So it's understandable there's a lot of, you know, papers that are coming out, really important papers that are coming out rapidly one after another. And they're all trying to sort of look at, you know, how do we stop the progression? That's one. How do we detect people who are at risk even before they develop the symptoms? Because once they develop the symptoms, it may be too late, mm-hmm. right, to treat. So we want to try to pick up who's at risk. And then, of course, then if we can completely block it, right? So you want to delay the progress so that, you know, at least if you have another 10 years of, you know, if you're going to get dementia at 70, but if you can delay it for 10 years, then at least you have, you know, good quality of life for 10 years, right?
I mean, why don't we just, I make it sound so easy, but why don't we just work on blocking the APP and the PSEN1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's going on already.
Yeah. Right? Okay.
Why is it so difficult?
Yeah. So that's a good question. I think, you know, there have been many clinical trials that have been so hopeful, you know, and then suddenly they announced that they're going to stop it because it's not having the same effect as they were hoping when they do it in the humans, right? So that's where, you know, you kind of have to go back to the beta amyloid, you know, what's actually happening in the cells, I think. So there are two camps that even within the beta amyloid world that, you know, is the beta amyloid harmful or is the beta amyloid accumulation a byproduct of something else happening in the cell and the beta amyloid accumulation is actually the cell trying to mop up all the toxic waste, right? So even within that, you know, the beta amyloid, you know, supporters, they're still trying to figure that out. But also, you know, like, I don't think beta amyloid is the full story because Alzheimer's disease is such a complex disorder. There must be other things happening in the cell as well. I mean, we know that we have the tau tangles, but now, for example, you know, there have been research, some of the later latest research on the genetics in late onset also is bringing in things like immunity. So if you have, not to say abnormal, but if you have an immune system which is less able to cope with, you know, the changes in the brain tissue that happen when some of the parts of the brain are degenerating, you know, then you're actually not able to stop the spread, let's say, of the inflammation, because that's also another theory that's happening.
Would that be epigenetics?
In the dementia world, there's growing evidence that, you know, inflammation, brain inflammation, due to either injury or due to infection, right? So it's like when you have an injured brain, or if it's been infected, then it's like the brain is on fire, mm-hmm. right? So you have inflammation, and after a while, the brain can kind of, you know, cool down the fire, and then everything goes back to normal and everything. But in some people, that inflammation persists. Right. And so if that inflammation persists, then it disrupts a lot of the other cells.
And it's a sign of a weaker immune system.
So it's slight changes to the genes that are dealing with the inflammation and how to detect it, how to stop it, etc. And so that's coming out from the studies on later onset. And I think that's going to be something that's going to be really interesting to look at in terms of therapeutic.
What would cause this inflammation?
A number of reasons. So you can, you know, infection. So there was also...
Infection from what?
Yeah, so for example, there was a latest study on chickenpox. They said that people who had chickenpox, actually the chickenpox, you've recovered from chickenpox,
yes.
You think you're fine. But actually that virus lays, the herpes virus lays, are dormant, you know, in your cells until at a later point it gets triggered. And when it comes back, it's actually stronger. And it can cause encephalitis, for example, viral encephalitis. And that encephalitis is like an inflammation of the brain. Yeah. And so then that could be one of the triggers to the degeneration that happens in the brain cells. Other things are, for example, if you had like some kind of brain injury, right? And one way that the brain kind of tries to respond to injury is, you know, when you're repairing it, you also, you know, have involvement of the immune system. And sometimes the immune system kind of goes a little bit haywire at first before it comes down.
Yeah.
So then, you know, perhaps that could also be the trigger. You know, so there are many different factors.
So do you think the gut bacteria analogy could possibly be a solution? I mean, I'm going all over, Dr.
Yeah, that's right.
So I am worried.
I know. So the gut microbiome also kind of feeds into the neuroinflammation kind of theory.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I hope it gets solved. Mm-hmm. And I hope, you know, with all the research, like, you know, I said there's a lot of data coming through now. And hopefully somebody will find a magic bullet or something that helps.
Still finding the answers.
Yeah.
When it comes to Alzheimer's disease. What is your message?
My message is the genetics angle of looking at neurodegenerative diseases is a way of, you know, helping the scientists uncover new angles of potential drug treatments, and because we can understand how, you know, the disease progresses in the cell. So I think for people out there, you know, I mean, it's no point really to worry about, you know, unless you have a family history, right? But then you would know anyway that you are at a slightly higher risk. But for those who don't have a family history of Alzheimer's and you're sort of wondering, oh, you know, what's going on in my DNA? Should I get it checked? So there isn't really a reliable test at the moment to say what would be your risk. There have been a few companies that offer screening for the ApoE because there are different forms of ApoE. There's a form called the E4 form of this ApoE gene, which is thought to be associated with a greater risk of Alzheimer's. But, you know, 75% of people who have the E4 don't get Alzheimer's. And 50.
But we know now, based on today's discussion, that
APOE, she had a rare variant.
That's right. So, I mean, APOE is just part of the whole story.
That's right. It's part of the whole story. So don't you know, if you have been tested, let's say for whatever reason, and you find that you have an APOE variant which puts you at a higher risk, right? Then take that as a positive way in that it doesn't mean that you're going to get Alzheimer's. It just means that you're at a slightly higher risk. So, you know, you can still take control of the situation. You can still make changes, you know, to your lifestyle, to your diet, you know, exercise more, you know, all those common sense things, right? And stay active, you know, socially active, etc. And all that will help. Even if somebody, you know, you say that, you know, we did all the right things and yet, you know, how come we got Alzheimer's or how come we got Parkinson's at 70, you know, then you can say, well, if you didn't do all those things, maybe you would have got it earlier, right? So whatever we do, you know, don't be, you know, have a fatalistic point of view, right? You know, whatever you do will help to delay, you know, it may not be like this lady delaying it by 20 years, but you know, it may give you an extra 5 years of healthy cognitive life. So please, you know, have a healthy lifestyle. I know I always say it, don't I?
Yes, you do. Well, at this point that, you know, we still don't have answers, it's the best thing you can do.
That's right.
For yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was enlightening for sure. Thank you so much for joining us and for explaining this whole understanding AD and genetics. Now we know that there are three genes, APP, PSEN1 and 2. We do know the beta amyloids is only part of the whole story. Mm-hmm. You have, in my opinion, it's those tau protein tangles.
Oh, you're in the tau camp.
Yeah. I mean, that you really, if that's the understanding, yeah, it could be. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of flip in between the two based on which paper
What's
comes
coming out.
Yeah. Okay. You go, oh, that's convincing. And you go, oh, that's convincing.
Fair enough. We'll continue these discussions as and when they come out. Hopefully to, you know, at least for us to better understand what's actually going on. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Azlina Ahmad Anwar, a neurogeneticist on understanding Alzheimer's disease genetics on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.